I'd like to take a moment and thank our sponsor. If you have a laser device for training and you want to take it to the next level, or if you're looking to get into using a laser device for training, check out the products at laserapp.com, LASRAPP.com. You can use code CSP2021 for 15% off the items you've selected. And thanks for checking them out. Welcome to this week's edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This week you have me, Dave, and you have Leo.
Yo.
Yo, yo, yo. Whoa. And as usual, we have a guest. This week's guest is none other than the Area 3 director, Matt Hopkins. How you doing, Matt?
Good. How are you guys? Thanks for having me on.
Doing great. Thanks for being on.
Yeah. It is appreciated.
So, Matt, what we normally do is we start off with five personal questions to get to know you.
Okay.
And then we move into the dirt.
Sounds good.
All right. Number one, favorite movie.
So I've been thinking about this knowing I'd be coming on. And as of right now, I have to say Lone Survivor.
Oh, okay.
Good choice.
Why do you choose Lone Survivor?
So I originally read the book for it, and then I saw the movie, and from everything I could tell, they did pretty good to stick with it and all those stories and articles outside of that. So it feels really real. And it hit at a certain time I read that. It was pretty impactful to me. And like how people can not think about themselves and basically sacrifice their life for someone else. And that was really powerful for me.
Well, now that you said it's very close to the book, I'll have to watch it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. It's really good.
You could have asked me that, Dave. I would have told you. I can read. A little hurtful. But yeah, it is. And those stuntmen, like, legit threw themselves off the side of cliffs. Oh, Dave, you got to. Yep. Yep.
All right.
Really
check it out.
It's really good.
Next movie up, then. All right. Favorite book?
I kind of struggle with this one. Let me think. You know, I think with Winning in Mind, I'll say that one. So most people think of that as it applies to shooting or anything like that. But if you take all the principles from that book and apply them to your life, it's actually very, very, very good for that. So I've learned more for my day-to-day and my work life from that book than just for shooting.
Okay. Pretty cool. All right. So our other guest host, Huggy, likes to ask people what their favorite superhero is or who they're.
So it's easily Cable.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know who Cable is.
X-Men universe. I was like, you're going to have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically like a sort of like a cyborg. He's a human, but he has, I think, mechanical features about him. He's always carries around a ton of guns and shoots and everything like that. So he has like really good aim and everything.
Yeah, I believe the mythology is he's the son of Cyclops, not Cyclops, but, Jean Grey and the guy, the dude, not Logan, the other guy.
He carries a really big gun.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in the Deadpool.
The latest Deadpool.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, I have to go back and check that then. Favorite gun and caliber?
Well, 9mm on caliber for sure.
Okay.
And
remember who you're employed by. Be very careful.
I understand that. That doesn't affect it. So I'm going to say SP-01 Shadow.
Okay, why that one?
That was a precursor to the Shadow 2. And it's the gun I've shot the most, and I liked it. And I actually got Grandmaster shooting that gun. So, and just recently, one of the local people started shooting that. and shooting an SP-01 version. So I got to kind of go back and feel it and think, man, just remember how it felt that far back. And I still have several of them. So that's my favorite right now and still will be probably for a while.
Okay. Now that's what you got GM in production?
Production, yes. Yep.
Okay. All right. So while we're on it then, what are you shooting in carry optics?
So I am shooting the P10F competition ready. It is a 5-inch P10 where we added a flat trigger, extended mag release, extended slide stop. It has a gold finish on the barrel. It's actually a titanium nitride finish on the barrel. So it actually held up with our lifetime testing way more than any of the standard black finishes on guns. It has an improved geometry on the feed ramp and chamber. And has a couple other gold features to kind of tie it in with the gold barrel on it.
Okay. Let me see if this is what we're talking about here.
So a little history behind that gun. Nope, that's the original P10. If you just search P10F competition ready.
Yeah, let me.
Before you go searching on that. So a little history behind that. I started shooting the P10F because we started building them in the U.S. And I thought it was kind of right to support the company and do that and get the gun's name out there. And while I was shooting that, I learned what we should do to help optimize it for competition. And we actually increased the barrel length and slide length on it to a full 5 inches. And it's still optic ready. So we did the improvements that I learned while I was shooting it in competition and had it basically moved all that stuff over into a factory gun that we could sell.
Okay. All right. I've got it now.
Yep. That is it.
Okay. We'll go up a little bit bigger. There we go. Okay.
Yep.
So it looks like most of them now, there's a cover that comes off.
Yes. The competition ready all come optic ready already on it. We don't sell it in a standard slide.
Okay.
We assemble those here in Kansas City in our facility that we work at here.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's cool.
I'm going to ask for the benefit of others. Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri.
So we are in Kansas City, Kansas.
Okay.
I live in Missouri, though. So
I'm sorry.
We have employees on both sides of the state line. So
it's okay.
It's good. It's good rivalry.
I've never been to either state, so I'm actually just saying I have no clue. I've never been to either.
Just depends on kind of where you grew up, on people, where they say they want to be at.
It's fair.
All right.
Both in America, so you're still winning.
That's true, yes. Yep.
There you go.
Just ask Dave.
So now
I saw the shirt. I saw the shirt.
Absolutely. I like to make the fifth one a little bit more unique to our guest. So I was like, all right, let me scroll through his Instagram, see what I can come up with. And I came up with a very interesting picture.
Okay. I'm interested to see which one you picked. Oh yeah.
So
yes.
What's his name or her name? I'm not sure.
It's a boy.
Okay.
His name is Shooter.
Okay. Yeah. I like it.
Yeah. We have a girl also from the same litter. So and her name is Six. So we have six and Shooter.
Six Shooter.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how old were they when you got them?
They were 8 weeks old when we got them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So we've had them they'll be 3 years old in January.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're a little bit older than mine.
You have Danes also?
I have three of them.
Oh, nice. Awesome.
And the top one and the middle one are related. The top one is dad. The middle one is son.
Oh, okay. Great.
And then this one was from a different litter altogether.
They're awesome.
So they are this awesome.
This is our second set of Danes, and they've been great.
Okay. Yeah, same with us. Our second. Now, I've had Danes in a previous marriage, but second set with the current marriage. So,
yeah, I did actually spoil them by letting them up when they were 8 weeks old, like letting them climb and lay on me. Mm-hmm. And so you know how that goes. They continue to do it no matter the size they are. So,
yes. And it doesn't matter if you're on a couch, in a chair, in a bed, it does not matter.
Yeah. It's they have no idea how big they are, and they think they can just get up there and it's the same as it always was. So, but it's really good.
It is. Yeah. It's two of them outweigh my wife, and the one always lays on her when she sits on the couch, so she cannot move. She is stuck there as soon as he lays on her.
Yeah, I think I have another photo up there of when I'm in my chair and he's up on that with me.
Oh,
yeah, it might be a little before that.
Oh, there he is. Looks like, he's behind a gate.
Yeah, he doesn't look happy. Regular size dog, so yeah, I'm out on this one. And the first time I met Dave's dogs, they S whip their tails into my hang down.
Yeah.
And I thought I was gonna die because I had like a vasectomy the week before. I was like, The next time I went over to his house, I made sure to stand like right next to the couch so they couldn't hit me with it.
Yeah, I'm not. Yeah,
I don't have it up there. It's on Facebook.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cool dogs.
I sit in a recliner, and he sits on front legs on one arm, back legs on the other arm, and that's how he lays down on the chair because he's too big to fit like on my lap.
Just wow.
Like so long and tall.
How much does he weigh?
I don't know exactly. We don't take him to get weighed that much. I know he's probably 130 to 150 or something like that. Depends on when the girls are in heat and how much he's eaten. So they actually fluctuate quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm same way when I'm in heat.
When your wife's in heat.
Yeah, that's how much I weighed in high school, like my freshman year.
Yeah.
All right, so Matt, I've listened to I listened to you on Practical Shooting After Dark, but I've heard you on a few others, and one of the things I heard you say was you bought your first gun at 21, but had you shot before then, or was that the first time you had shot a gun too?
I shot some pistols, rifles, hunting when I was in school with my dad and parent and mom. We used to go hunting. I used to go bowling pin shooting with my dad. As soon as I kind of graduated or a couple years before that, we had tailored off and didn't do any of the bowling pin shooting. So it was like 5 or 6 years since I shot when I bought that gun.
Okay. What was that gun?
It was a Smith & Wesson M&P.
Oh, okay.
1.0, yeah. So it was a 4-inch striker fired gun.
Now, how long after buying that gun did you find the USPSA?
It was several months. So I bought the gun. So let me a brief history. Someone broke in my house while I was away, and I'm like, I need to get a gun for protection. So I bought a gun and bought a little hand open safe, did that. Then I'm like, I don't really know how to use this really well, so I'm going to go get some training. And the training class I took, the instructors were competitors and police officers. And they invited me out to a match really close after the class. And I went and shot the match. And basically at that point, I was like, where else can I shoot? And I went to Walmart and bought a bunch of ammo when you could at that point. You could buy thousands of rounds at a time.
Yeah, in the good old days. Walmart still loved America.
Yeah. $20 for 100 rounds.
Yeah. Mm. That's right. They're not a sponsor, so that's fine.
No. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So then I started. Days? Yeah. Then I started going. I was living in Tulsa at the time. So I shot the matches in Tulsa and around there. And I drove to Oklahoma City a couple months and shot their match. So that was a couple hours away. I wasn't working on the weekend, so I had the time. I was working on cars at that point. So Monday through Friday, I could travel around. And then at the end of that year in 2007, I shot the North Texas Open, shooting production in C-class, and ended up winning C-class at that match at my first state-level match.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was pretty much hooked at that point, and I looked for more USPSA-centric training instructors and took training classes from them.
So who all have you taken classes from?
So I've taken classes from the TDSA in Tulsa. I've taken classes from Phil Strader. I've taken classes from Ben Steger.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've kind of hung out with Ben quite a bit and traveled around, and we've shot as like just practicing. So learned, took a lot from him. And I actually credit a lot of my learning for learning how to actually shoot USPSA and that what's best way to navigate through the stages with for a local competitor named JD Smith. And we had a local indoor match where we shot every Tuesday night, and I attended that every week for years. And we got to basically go in there. We'd set up a stage, and you could run it one way, and we would leave it set up, and you could try different things, like three or four different ways of running the stage to figure out which way was best. And I credit a lot of my development to that, being able to test different things on the same stages, because you guys know how uncommon that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Imagine that. That was huge in your growth.
Yep. Yeah.
That's a lot of experimentation. You can really say, oh, this looks like a good idea. And you're like, oh, that was horrible.
Or you can say that this way looks completely horrible, but you end up doing it and it doesn't turn out that bad. So
yeah,
you get both ways of that. Yep.
That actually just gave me a thought. Since there's three of us, we should all shoot stages a different way and see which one's best, because we know we're not going to win anyways.
Well, the two of us aren't going to win.
Yeah,
the two up on top of the screen.
Yeah. Sorry, that was meant for Huggy.
Yeah. But, okay. Yeah. Now I've got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew.
Now, I'll how long did? Anyway.
I'll shoot a stage anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do a lot of testing unless it's something completely incorrect, like. You start on the back right of the stage and you have to like run all the way to the front left and then you backtrack a bunch. The time is not that much different. There's some principles you have to stick to that help you kind of figure that out.
Okay. Now here's a question. So how long did it take you to figure out those general principles?
So I think I'm still trying to like kind of figuring them out, or at least proving to myself that they're still correct.
Okay.
So I still revert back to some of them or question that, is this the right thing to do? And I think that's one of my biggest ways I can improve upon, is just trusting that I know the way to do it is right and not second guess myself.
Okay. I get that. So do you ever come up with your plan and then see somebody shoot and go, I wonder if I should do it that way instead?
I've done that. I can do that. It depends on. I've actually done that quite a bit to try to get used to it, and actually did it on purpose so I can actually work on it. Or I've gone up to a stage and not allowed myself to walk through, and I've got up there and just looked at the stage for two shooters where I wasn't on it or something, or saw them shoot it and like didn't do a 5-minute walkthrough beforehand. So I've put myself in some of those situations where I could learn how to do that if I needed to. And I've done it successfully in the past. And it would have to be a pretty big advantage and something that you didn't see at all to do it. Because it is very challenging, and you have to be very, very, very concentrated on running the stage in your mind and visualizing it. And that's the only way you can burn it in.
Are you shooting the world shoot if they ever have it?
Yes. Yep. I'm on the production optics light team. If they do. Okay. I don't know if they will. No one knows right now.
Yeah. I'm hearing a lot of chatter that people are thinking it's not going to happen, but obviously it's still on for now. But the reason I ask is I feel like you doing those things you were just talking about would actually help you at an IPSC match where you can't see the stages ahead of time. You know, you just have your walkthrough period and that's it.
Yes. You get used to that. So basically, you know how many targets. You can kind of start putting the picture together, like this person's going to this area and shooting six rounds. And then like everybody does that, you know, there's three targets in there. If someone goes in and shoots seven rounds, you're like, okay, they probably made a shot up. But if everybody goes in there and shoots seven rounds, there's probably three targets in the steel.
Mm.
And you can kind of start seeing that stuff and putting the picture in your head. Cause you could pretty much see, like, they don't have walls blocking everything out, but you're just not on the stage in the exact shooting position where you are. So you actually have to rely on visualization quite a bit more. And then when you're doing your walkthrough, you just have to basically verify at that point.
Okay.
Or if there's a tricky spot you have to hit, or foot position, or an actual onstage marker that you have to see, if there's like a stake and a fault line and you have to hit that spot or something.
Okay. Definitely. IPSC's definitely a different game. I mean, the different rules are, you have to stay within the fault lines. You can't like, you can't be like USPSA and go around walls to the other side. Right. So.
Socialism, man.
Yeah. Hey, they spent all that time putting all those walls and fault lines down. They want you to use them.
There you go.
It's fair, I guess. Don't make excuses for them.
So you got elected back in, what was it, August, I think, was elections?
Yeah, it ended August 1st, and I was informed like on August 2nd.
Wow, that was quick.
Yeah, they actually do a really good job from what I can tell. Everything's electronic, so.
Yeah, so they should know immediately.
Yep, yes, exactly.
So now what made you decide to run for Area 3?
So I wasn't super happy with the direction of the org was going, where they prioritized revenue over what is best for the competitors and the sport and the existing members.
Okay.
The previous administration was prioritizing how much money's coming in versus how good the experience is for the existing people. Now, obviously, we can't have an organization with zero money coming in. But I believe if you make it really, really, really good for the existing people, they will continue to shoot for one and do it for more years. So that means more activity fees coming in, more membership dues paid. At that point, people will see that and then they'll want to also participate in it. So that's what I'm trying to do and make it better for the members. And that's the number one thing that I'm looking at for any decision that's made, any vote that's cast, anything that's being done on the board that I have a say in it. It's always going to be how is this good or bad, or what's this do to the members? Because that's a whole organization. Without them, we wouldn't have an organization.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So is that why you voted no with the popper? Change.
So I think there's three failures with poppers. You can have a mechanical breakage, you can have an environmental breakage, or you can have someone reset it incorrectly. I believe the shooting it twice only went to setting it incorrectly. So it only addressed one of the three issues that can make a popper come out of calibration. And the other thing was that it wasn't put to members first to get input on it. And I think we should take any rule changes that happen, if it's equipment, 100, like any rule changes, no matter what. Doesn't matter if it's re-clarifying something about chronographing or something like that, or calibration or anything on the steel, user equipment, like the competitor's equipment or anything. I think those should always be put out for member feedback before the board votes on them.
Okay. I would agree with that. I think there's, I mean, anybody can come up with something that no one had thought of, you know, like, oh yeah, we probably should address that.
Yeah. So and the other thing is, I think that at some level there should have been some input put into it from the existing RM cadre. So once they came up with an idea, send that out to the RMs and see how, what they think it would affect and change during an existing match that's being ran, or just their thoughts on it.
That makes sense. Has there been any discussion of using things like SurveyMonkey, where, you know, kind of like the elections, where you can send a SurveyMonkey survey out to the either the entire membership or your CROs or your range masters or whomever, and you can instantly get those results back and then be able to disseminate that to the board and have a discussion and then come up?
I have not heard of any discussions to use that. I think it has to be done. I think the first place we do it is after action surveys from matches that USPSA runs. How do we know, besides just people offering their input on social media posts or podcasts or something like that, how we did? We have no idea.
Yeah.
And if we think we have an idea, we're only hearing from the people that are being very outspoken about it. And if someone's saying, like, if someone had a good time and they're like, well, if you did this one thing, it would improve the match greatly. But if a vast majority of the people saw that, we should take that input in and use that to make the matches better.
Yeah, I know Keanu did that with Area 8 both years. Mm-hmm. So I liked that. That was nice. I was able to, you know, provide my feedback, whatever I had. So that I like that a lot.
I don't know if SurveyMonkey's, I think they're pretty limited on the number of questions you can use. I don't know if that would be the perfect service or not, but once the board or whoever wanted to do it, they could do some little research into that and see if that's the best option or if there's other options.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I know we use, where Leo and I work, we use Google Forms a lot. You know, that's another free option. You can just send a link and then people can fill it out that way. So there's many different things. So
yeah, unfortunately, neither is a sponsor.
Right.
Yeah. It's a downer.
Now, I know that you are potentially looking to run for president.
Yep.
And I say potentially because I understand you haven't asked for the you haven't petitioned them yet, correct?
Yeah, I haven't asked to get the petition to fill out. So you have to request a petition from HQ. You have to get 50 signatures from active USPSA members to be put on the ballot. And I have not officially asked for that petition. I did circulate previous forms that were for area director. And as of my understanding right now, those are no longer valid. So anybody that signed that has not signed for me to run for president.
Okay.
So as soon as they get the announce the election and put the dates out, I have everything lined up to get those 50 signatures within a week and send it back to HQ and get put on the ballot within minute, like within days. So I'm not worried about that.
Okay. Now I assume the same reasons you became the area director, you're looking to become president.
Yes. Yep. Exactly.
Okay.
And I'll be able to have, I don't know if I'll be able to have a bigger influence because you're once again, one of nine people that vote on anything. And you have to get people to think about what you want to do and agree with it. So you have to build consensus on that on the board to actually get rules changed or anything like that. And they're still kind of going through what the roles, responsibilities, duties of the new president will be. So no one even really knows what that is right now.
Now, when you were talking to Bill Duda, you said that you would like to see postings of the roles, job descriptions for president, board members, all of that.
Well, I think all the board members, I think we're all in agreement, and I've heard a pretty good agreement. And my opinion is that everybody thinks that the role, the duties, responsibilities, everything should be put out before the next election happens.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I mean, and again, probably should be posted before. I almost feel like it should be posted somewhere so they can get feedback on all of that as well before make a decision.
That is going to happen. The current plan is all the bylaw changes, any changes that we come to a consensus on and make a motion on, we have to, per the bylaws, post that for a minimum of 10 days. So somebody makes a motion and someone seconds it to change the bylaws. At that point, it then cannot be voted on until the next meeting. And per the bylaws, that's 10 days. We've all agreed to put it up for hopefully as much as 30 days before it's actually voted on.
And that's for a period of, for comment too, right?
Any member can offer their feedback to any of the board members, president, anything like that at that point. And I would actually suggest it that people go look at it when it comes out and then send the feedback to their area director, section coordinators. And you can also copy all the board members on it if you're worried about your area director not taking the input and you think it might be better to send out to the whole group. You can also do that. Nothing stopping you from doing any of that.
You knew what my next question was then.
No, I didn't. But
well, as you were talking, I was like, well, what would prevent one area director? And that's where I was leading with it. Okay. Yeah. The what I was getting to earlier was the roles, responsibilities, all that. I mean, at this time, we're not even sure that the president will still have a vote on anything, correct? Because the roles and responsibilities haven't been determined yet.
That's true, I guess. But I've heard no talk of eliminating the ninth tie-breaking vote that the president would have. Okay. I've heard no talk of that.
Okay.
But somebody there could be something that comes out or and talks about that afterward. I don't know. But I've heard no talk about that. I don't actually foresee that happening. The general consensus, I think, is that people want the members to elect a national representative as the president. And that's where I think that's going. I don't think that'll change.
Okay. So it'll be just like in the past. I mean, he'll be one vote out of nine. So there won't be any more or any less, quote unquote, power to change anything on his own anyway.
No, not at all.
Okay. Because that seems to be a lot of the discussion with the past president was, he made all these changes, but in reality, he's only one voice out of nine. So
yeah, well, the board technically, the board voted in, I believe, early 2016 to change the bylaws away from an executive director and a hired executive director and an elected president to an elected president / CEO. So the president's role absorbed all the executive director duties. But there was also stuff in there that said at the authority of the board or with approval from the board. So there was the board has always had the power. Now, if the personality that was in there was very strong and didn't allow or didn't agree with or didn't ask the board if they could do stuff, that's what happens. But the board has always had the power. They always will have the power. And with each area broken up like that and geographically separated, it'll all come down to the board will always have the power. They can do all the changes. Not one person by themselves can do anything.
And that's how it should always be. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned something on there too. When they were talking about rules changes, about principles of divisions.
Yes.
Well, what were you referencing there?
So what I'm referencing is we all know what revolver is. It's a gun mm-hmm. that the cartridge is revolver
revolves.
Around. Yeah, exactly. Yep. We all know what single stack is. Single stack column magazine, single action triggers, 1911 style.
Yep.
We all know what limited is. It's 40 caliber major power factor guns, iron sights with magwells, single action.
Okay.
We know what limited is. Basically open to do whatever you want. PCC, it's a rifle and 9mm.
Okay.
This is where we get into interesting conversations. What is production? Because the biggest question is it out of the box 9mm guns that look sort of factor-ish, or is it like, that's what I mean by principles. Like what are this stuff? Carry optics seems pretty set. Everybody can agree on that, except a lot of people are trying to get single action guns into it. And at this point, I do not agree with allowing single action guns into carry optics. It would drastically change the landscape of that division. Just based on magazine capacity, and we don't even have to talk about triggers at that point. All 2011s can get 23, 24 reloadable in their 9mm mags, and there are very few guns out there that can get 24 rounds in the gun at this moment. That, and we're not even talking about magwells or triggers or anything like that. But we can't even have that conversation until you get past the magazine capacity, how it would make obsolete the most of the existing guns out there being used now.
Okay.
I think that's all the divisions, right? Limited 10, we know what that is.
Yeah. Yeah, you pretty much covered all of them. So, okay.
Yeah, so I think we should figure out what the divisions are before we go trying to fix them or update them or change them or anything like that. And if everybody agrees that production is 9mm minor factory-ish looking guns, and I didn't say anything about capacity there, it could be, is it a low capacity division or just a 9mm factory looking gun? Like that needs to be decided before we do anything with the division.
Okay. Yeah. And I would agree. Again, I would concur. Now, how do you feel we are? I mean, we are the American or U.S. version region of IPSC.
Yeah.
How do you feel we are with our rules in relation to their rules? Do we keep drifting further apart?
I don't think we should change USPSA for less than 100 people in USPSA. And the people that are shooting IPSC that normally shoot USPSA, they all have the equipment to go over and shoot IPSC matches with either modifying their current equipment or have duplicate equipment, just IPSC equipment, like IPSC specific equipment. Like most of the standard shooters, which is the IPSC version of limited, have different magwells, different magazines, different base pads, and have the equipment for that. And we don't have enough IPSC matches to in the U.S. to justify any changes to the rules.
Well, and that was going to be my next question was, do you feel we should have more IPSC matches just for those 100 shooters who do go and compete?
I don't think we need to have specific IPSC matches for them. If they want to shoot their equipment, all of that those guns for IPSC divisions will fit into USPSA divisions also. So you could go and shoot your IPSC production optics gun in open or carry optics as you stand now. You will not be on the same magazine capacity level as USPSA carry optics, but that's by design from IPSC. They have 15 round limit. We have a magazine length restriction, but you could go right out there. If you wanted to test your skills based on the IPSC rules, nothing is preventing you from doing that in the current state of the rules or matches.
Yeah. And I didn't phrase it right. I just meant, do you think we should have in the different areas, maybe a few IPSC matches a year, just in general for everybody, not necessarily just, I meant that it would make it, it would give those 100 a little bit more practice, but it would also give your normal USPSA members a taste of what an IPSC match is.
I think if people want to have those matches, I think it's more than fair to let them, and nothing in the rule. You can have an IPSC match right now. Like I could host an IPSC match at Mill Creek at a certain date. I believe I have to ask there's something you have to make sure and do before you do that and to call it an IPSC match. I'm not sure exactly what the reporting is on that, but you have to do something. You can't just say you're having an IPSC match. Gotcha. And nothing's to say that you can't just put a USPSA match up that uses all the IPSC targets and the 3-2-1 format or anything like that.
And then put in the written stage brief that you have to stay inside the fault lines.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you could do that. You'd have to set up something to keep them inside of it. Just because, you know, USPSA competitors.
Okay. The gamesmanship.
Yeah. They'll do anything to game a stage, even if it doesn't make sense or isn't faster. I'm going to run around this wall and add 10 steps to my stage and have a super hard setup and shoot the hardest shot of the match because I ran around that wall. It's faster.
I gamed it. And it looks good on the YouTube video. Yeah,
I gamed it, so it makes sense.
That's right. So before we get deeper into the whole president and all that other stuff, I want to jump back for a minute. What I know you primarily are shooting carry optics now.
Correct.
So what are your thoughts on, and I've been tracking statistics and it is far and away the most popular division.
Yep.
So what are your thoughts on a standalone carry optics nationals?
I'm sure you've heard a previous podcast. So I think having standalone nationals is okay, as long as the range is adequate for a national level event that needs a minimum number of bays to host that, to have an adequate nationals at it. Now, I believe Talladega is a awesome facility. If they had 5 more bays, if they had 20 bays instead of 15, there's no reason to have another nationals at any other location. But since Talladega only has 15 bays, I think it severely limits the level of the stages. And you have to double up stages to get even to a semi-appropriate number of stages, like 18, to have a nationals event where you can actually test enough skills to get the best shooter at that event.
Yeah, I would agree. And then you lose a bay if you have sponsors and other stuff. Because I was even looking at, could you, where we all parked, just above that, you have that other nice pistol range area. And I was like, oh, that'd be a great area where you could put sponsors because there's a building there. There's all, but then I was like, if you're a sponsor, why would you want to be that far away from the competition though? You know, who's going to actually go out of their way to go up there? So that doesn't work either. So I agree. It was very nice.
The range is amazing. They have great facility. It just it's only lacking five bays. That's it. And if they had five extra bays on there, hands down, it'd be the best range out there. It'd be one of them. I haven't been to Cameo yet. We'll see this year coming up.
Yeah, that'll definitely be interesting. One of the range master for the Virginia State match, Jim McBurnett. Nope, McBurnett. There we go. I always say his name wrong. McBurnett. he actually did a bunch of IT. His company did a bunch of IT work out there. So in 2020, during that match, I was helping with that match. And he pulled it out and was telling me all the stuff that they had done, everything you can do technology-wise with that range. It is amazing. I mean, you can stream from every single bay, hardwire in. You could have scoreboards up, all kinds of stuff. It's crazy how. And then I guess they just made a bunch more bays out there. So, yeah, I mean,
they have a ton of equipment and a ton of space. So I'm looking forward to that.
And I guess
bring my winter coat just in case.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy cow. That could be very interesting. Elevation and cold.
Yes. Yeah. When they announced it, I immediately pulled it up on the weather app and it's like, oh, 33 degrees. I'm like, awesome. This could be interesting next year.
It's definitely going to be interesting. I love the idea of having a standalone carry optics match. Mm-hmm. Cause I kind of felt like even with at Talladega, I feel like they will fill every single slot that they have. Yes. Without a problem.
100%.
So I love the idea. Maybe if you had it back at Frostproof or somewhere else, that'd be fantastic. But I personally am excited there's a standalone carry optics nationals just for that reason.
I think it'll be good. I think it also makes sense to have a couple bigger matches like the back-to-back match for Race Gun and Optics Nationals we had this year. And I think that probably makes more sense financially for the organization than to have a bunch of individual matches spread out all over the country. And that's just due to strictly travel. And RO, like paying to get the ROs there. They have a set fee like $375 for travel for ROs. And if you do that six different times, it's obviously going to cost more than if you do it twice.
Right.
And that 100% goes to the bottom line of the org, and the championship fees offset that to some level.
Now, what are your thoughts about one thing I've always thought is if they could find a central location in the middle of the country to hold nationals each year, I feel like that would also draw more people because you don't have, you know, you're going to obviously Wanzik and Christian Seiler are going to fly from Washington to Florida every year.
They're going to fly wherever.
Exactly. But there's going to be a lot of people that aren't going to make that trip just because it's so far. But if you have it in Kansas City, Kansas every year, now you have made it so that, you know, everybody's basically equidistant from the place.
Yeah. And there's some level to that because if after you get out a certain number of hours of drive, people are going to immediately say that it's too far. So anywhere from whatever your number is, if you're okay to drive 8 hours to a match and the match is 12 hours away, you might think of it because it's nationals to do it. But if it's 16 hours away, you probably won't even think about it. Some people will, some won't. And you'll get people to complain no matter where you have it, when you have it, what setup you do. So I don't know. I think more information out there, the better. And further ahead of time actually reduces that amount of complaining or people not happy. So if they announce the 2023 Nationals this next spring, I'm not saying they will or won't. I have literally zero info on it. That would actually, I think people would be much, I would hope they would be happier. That way they can plan further in advance. They can let their work know that they want the time off. They can actually think about it for a while before they have to make a decision if it's worth it or not.
That makes sense. All right. So now getting back to the whole presidential thing, I might be being a little nitpicky, but and I know that they're looking at a president and a CEO, but I've always thought of the CEO as the president. He's the chief executive officer. And I feel like this position they're looking to create again that they had in the past is more of a COO.
Yeah, I think the naming of the new position has, it's definitely, there's been a lot of conversations on that. And I think the current, they've settled on a name and it's not COO or CEO. I don't even know if they put in the latest minutes. I don't want to say something I shouldn't. So give me 1 second.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be a COO or a CEO. It's going to have a different title.
Okay.
Let's see if an actual name was put in there. I don't know if it was or not. Yep. So current title they're working with is managing director. That's in the November 16th minutes.
Okay. I did look at those, but I didn't catch that.
I think the biggest, from what I've heard, is that if you have an elected person that is also the CEO, they would be considered an employee. And that brings it its own challenges to if they have to do anything like remove them from office. An employee gets different protections than just an elected board member or an elected officer of the corporation.
So why not make them a contractor then?
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah.
I mean,
I will ask my wife, who is an HR professional, and find out. But because they're still technically a satellite employee, I think they have like a few more protections than somebody who can just be like, the board finds you like vote of no confidence, scooch.
Yeah, but I know like Matt, we live in the Northern Virginia region. So I know a lot of people. I met a lot of people who are contractors for the federal government. And literally, like right now, they're talking about the budget. They literally get axed and then picked up again a month later. Their contracts can be ended at any time. So I know there are different rules and laws and stuff, but I've also seen that it's much easier because they're a contractor and not an actual employee, that it's a little bit easier to sever those ties as well. Just a thought.
I'm going to admit my ignorance on this one. I don't know a lot about that. They have a lawyer, like legal counsel, that they talk to on some of this stuff. And I'm sure they'll get advised on that. I have actually, there's been talks about conflict of interest because I've said I'm interested in running for the position. So I try to stay out of a lot of those conversations, or I talk very generically about it just because there's obviously a potential of conflict there. And we've kind of set the board has set some guidelines that obviously no one interested in the position would have any conversations or be in the room during compensation talks. And if anybody feels uncomfortable,
$1 million.
Yeah, exactly. That only lasts 1 year with the current money we have. So,
right. Well, I guess that's you and Bruce, correct?
That's me and Bruce. Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, if anybody's ever uncomfortable, or either me or Bruce are making them uncomfortable, anybody can say that and we would be excused at that time.
Okay. But each time, both of you would be excused, I take it.
I would assume so. Yeah. But we haven't ever done that.
Okay. It hasn't gotten there yet.
No, I don't think it will, but you never know. I try not to make them uncomfortable.
I believe it. I mean, everything I've seen of you, like I said, I've listened to you on a bunch of different podcasts. I've not picked up on anything that would seem like you're that type of person that would intentionally make people uncomfortable. You know what I mean? You might state your opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think you're shy about your opinion, but I don't think you're that type of guy who just intentionally makes people uncomfortable. So I get that. Now, two of the people that I'm interested in seeing as president, you might be able to include yourself in that conversation or in that realm.
Rarified air might
not actually be eligible.
How so?
Well, I know that they're looking to make a minimum time in the USPSA, which you obviously meet that. That's not an issue.
Yeah.
But I've seen where they also want to add that you have to be a current RO. And I thought I saw something somewhere that said your RO has expired.
Yes, it has. That's got a lot of conversation that I let it expire. I don't remember why back in 2013 I did that. I think my opinion is just because you take a class, like I don't know what your guys' jobs are, but let's say someone's a paper folder for the General Mills paper folding company and they took an online class to how to fold paper. That doesn't automatically make them a good paper folder. And it doesn't mean that the person they hired off the street that was cleaning the bathrooms also couldn't learn how to fold that paper better than the person that took the class.
You're not wrong.
No one here is disagreeing with that.
Nope.
And we've seen it.
We all have.
Yeah.
Class and degrees or certifications don't mean you know what you're doing.
Well, yeah, that was actually the thing that was popping into my head. I'm like, master's degrees don't make you the master of anything.
Right.
C's get degrees, baby. You know? Don't worry. Dude that graduates medical school with a D average is still a doctor. He's just not, hopefully he's a podiatrist because I'm not the guy. I don't want to go see him as my cardiologist.
And since that's the biggest topic of people's concerns with me running for president, that is going to be solved before the election even happens or is even started. So
okay,
if that's the only thing they have to talk about, they need to think of something else here soon.
Well, it may have been social media where I saw it. I don't remember where, but I mean, you know how that's been going nuts.
Oh, I think called it was, me out at the members meeting that I was the only one that doesn't have it. So current USPSA staff is calling it out also. So,
okay. I think
that's super professional of a employee of the organization to call out a member. I think it's really good.
A board member.
Yeah.
So
I don't know a lot, but I do recognize sarcasm.
Well,
and I appreciate it in all its forms.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I was willing to state that, you know, if this president wasn't going to have a vote, you know, if he was just going to be the face of the organization and kind of drive it and lead it, but, and bring his recommendations to the board, but not have a vote, I was going to tell you that I don't want to see you leave the Area 3 director then, because now we lost the vote, if you know what I mean. So I was going to say, so here, another thing about the president thing I have a question about. So we had Phil Strader on. I don't know if you listened to that one.
Yep, I did.
Okay. And one of the things, because we had Ted, and when Ted was on, I brought up the conversation with Phil, and the conversation was, you know, he worked at Remington at the time, and Remington's like, you're spending too much time at USPSA. USPSA is like, you're spending too much time with Remington. We never see you. So I, even though there was the issue with the past president, I still feel like that's the better option. And again, that person's only 1/9 of a voice. I still feel like a full-time president is kind of what the organization needs. I could be completely wrong, but I feel like it's kind of really hard if you're the face of the organization as a president to have a presence if you're a part-time person.
I think it'd definitely be difficult. I think this is something, my opinion is that you need to set the duties, responsibility, the role of that person before you do anything else. So if the board thinks that that position is, with all that stuff figured out, just a part-time position, then it makes sense. If it is more than that and the board decides, I've actually stepped out of this conversation.
I understand.
But when I was setting the roles of the people under me, the buyers, the first thing we did is figure out what they're going to do, who they're going to report to, how long they're going to work. So then we could set up the wages, the salary, the benefits for that.
Based on your requirements. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So I've done that. I've changed roles here a couple times at CZ, and we always first figured out what the person's going to do before we figured out what the pay or the time requirements would be.
So what do you do at CZ?
I am the purchasing manager. I manage two buyers. I do some purchasing for CZ, mm-hmm. buying some more specialized items or stuff that is kind of like fire. Like we need it now or something. Like ammo's been the biggest issue this year. And I do all the new product development procurement. So I go find new vendors, use the existing vendor pool we have to create new items for any number of things, from gun parts to soft goods like bags or hats or shirts or anything like that. So the whole gamut from firearm components or ammo, and I source all that stuff. I can do pretty much anything at this point, sourcing wise.
Wow. So if I was like, hey, if something happens to fall off the back of the truck and end up at my house, like, you're the guy that I would talk to.
No, I don't. I said,
don't lie to me, Matt.
I manage the relationship. Someone else receives the product in.
We're managing our relationship right now.
Exactly.
You know, oh no, this fell. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah. It's scratched. Here you go.
And then I report all the updates to the team here at CZ.
So okay, well, that seems pretty official. So disregard my previous comment. my bad. Obviously a joke, people.
Now, you guys sound like you're pretty independent of CZ in Europe.
We're ran pretty fairly independent. There's still shared technology and design and product. Still, the bulk of CZ USA's product is made in the Czech Republic and imported and sold through CZ USA here in Kansas City.
Okay.
Does anybody there call it CZ?
No. And
okay, good.
Only the Canadians do. Canada say that.
Yeah. Them Canadians, they get a little crazy. When I
was in customer service, it was the easiest way to tell if they were from America or not, is how they said that.
Yeah. It's like our second interview ever was a Canadian couple that we shot with at Nationals, and they were like, oh, CZ. And I'm like, everybody who doesn't know what that means, that's just Z everywhere else in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Whew. Yep.
So how did you come to, you earlier you said you started when you started shooting USPSA, you were working on cars.
Yep.
And now you're working on guns.
Yeah.
How do you go from cars to guns? you're buying stuff for them, so you're kind of working on them.
Sort of, yeah. I work on my own guns.
There you go.
While I'm here. So started shooting USPSA in Tulsa, was working on cars then. Didn't like that career field, moved back home and worked for my parents' restaurant for several years. And I was getting to be sort of well-known in the Kansas City area with shooting at that point. And CZ had a job opening for a customer service person, answering phones, taking orders for people. Applied for that and got that. And then that's how I started. So, and then I've just advanced through my career. was like a lead with a web store customer, senior parts coordinator, I guess they called it. It was basically a lead for customer service and web store. And then I was parts manager, which had all the web store orders, did the fulfillment of those orders, had all the customer service people answering the phone on that. So I
Were you the chat guy? Hi, this is Matt.
Can I help you with your order? We didn't have chat at that time.
Because I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, oh, those people are so friendly.
And then I started doing some sourcing of stocks. So I started sourcing stocks from another local Kansas City company, and that just progressed and added on to just a little more. So I added another item, and then it eventually got where that load was so high that they split me off of the customer service team into purchasing. And then that just kept building. I bought everything for all the imported items and the small assembly department we had at that time. And our business has grown so much that they had to hire people. I worked with them and hired buyers underneath me to help manage the purchase orders and receiving and making sure everything is managed under that.
Okay. Wow. So how long have you worked for CZ?
It'll be 12 years in March.
Okay. I would say that's a lot of, you know, working your way up and zigzagging and all that. That's pretty good. I forgot. Your family owns a Texas barbecue restaurant, correct?
Kansas City.
Wow.
Yeah. The real barbecue Kansas City.
This is about to start a fight.
I'm from Texas, so I had to say it.
I'm surprised you didn't say it earlier.
I
totally forgot nice about it.
On this. It's about to get real aggressive. I will see you guys later. Good talk.
This is where he makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah. I thought we went through this. He doesn't do that, Dave. Way to ruin it.
I totally forgot about that too. You said you went back and worked at your parents' restaurant. I was like, oh, that's right.
I worked before they were on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. So I worked at the small restaurant where it was like 3 or 4 employees, and three of them were my mom, dad, and brother. So it was
true mom and pop. Yeah. Yep. Wow. How big are they now?
They have
met huge, Guy Fieri.
Yeah. Quite.
Kind of a big deal, Dave.
Couple times.
Yeah. More than once, man. So the food's good then, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's really good. Yep.
Okay.
What's the name of it?
Smoking Guns Barbecue.
All right. If I'm ever in Kansas City, I'm
already
in.
I don't even care if it's bad.
I like the name.
Over there.
Okay. I like it.
If you're ever here, just let me know. I'll take you. Anybody could do that too.
Okay.
Well, don't be giving away my food just yet.
They have enough. You'll be okay.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah. I talked to, we had Mike Foley on. It was just me and him on that episode, but I talked to him about it. I emailed Ted Murphy and he replied back, but I've asked him about live streaming the board meetings.
Yep.
Is there any talk of trying to make that a regular thing for all board meetings?
There has been talk about doing that. I don't think that'll happen soon or with current people on the board.
Okay.
There's concerns about if people can be open enough if it was live streamed and offer their, like, they'd still offer their opinions or what they thought on stuff.
Really?
If it was live streamed. I personally have no issue with live streaming it. I think it would be, there's certain things like employee matters or discipline with members, like you have to do that stuff in private.
Yeah, absolutely. And
beyond that, there's nothing that we talk about in those that we shouldn't talk to the general membership.
Right. And that's a simple thing where, you know, like what we're doing right now, you just cut the screen and put just like a generic picture up there while you're in executive session.
Yep.
And then when you know, it's no different than like a county board meeting. You know, they live stream that, they talk about it. They have people come up and talk, they discuss things, and if they need to go into executive session, they just, hey, we'll be back in a minute.
Yep.
And you my put on Jeopardy range. Music.
Yeah. My local range has an open board meeting where any of the range members can go and attend. Like, you don't even have to ask. You just go there and show up, and they'll let you in. If there's something that they have to have a closed session on, they boot you out of the building until they're done.
Well, because we talked about it with Ted. Like, if I wanted to sit in a meeting, like, I'd have to get special permission.
Yeah, and currently under the bylaws, that's only available to be done in an in-person meeting. There's no mechanism in
place. That's a long way to go.
Yeah. There's no mechanism in place to have someone attend a virtual board meeting.
And when is the next in-person? Is that in January?
It's in January. February? It's the 15th and 16th of January in the Tampa Bay area. I don't know exactly where.
I'll go to Tampa.
So it's exactly not at where. SHOT Show.
No, not at SHOT Show.
Sorry, Dave.
Are you guys going to have anybody there at SHOT Show?
CZ is going to have a booth there at SHOT Show, yes.
All right, I will be visiting them.
I will not be there, though.
Well, there's no point in going in, Dave. You may as well just stay home.
Yeah, I mean,
could you dry freeze some of that barbecue and set it there, and then just write Texas barbecue on it and just really confuse them? You know what I mean?
They have
like, this is not right.
You could do that.
That'd be pretty awesome.
I'm all in favor of doing the telecasting or the virtual board meetings, having put up. I'm actually in favor of having like quarterly member meetings or monthly member meetings that where all the directors would have reports and say updates from their respective departments. And then a financial statement out to the members every month. Cause I think the way it's currently being done, the financial statement doesn't come out until June or July of the next year. So at this moment, we could be, it's up to 18 months before a financial statement is put out to the members. And there's a lot of good and a lot of bad that could happen in those months. And I think the members should be aware of that.
Yeah. Two whole babies can be born in that many months.
That'd be fast, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could. Yeah, a little quick.
Yeah.
But possible.
Hey, not, no offense to the Irish, but Irish twins are a thing. My niece and nephew.
So we also talked about, and it was in the minutes, but Ted and I also, or the three of us also talked about transcription services, yeah. That type of stuff, so that the minutes can be, they don't have to be a word for word transcription of the meeting, but just a little bit more. Like, I was sharing with him some older minutes versus the newer ones seem to have more meat to them.
Yep.
So they're much nicer. At least you get a better flow of what's going on, what was discussed, all of that. Are you guys going to stick with that version? Do you know, or?
I think in general, the board wants to be more transparent and put more information out there. I think the board minutes could be, obviously everything could get improved. And there's been a bunch of movement towards in that direction. So I think it'll just keep getting better. Like, people that do it first thing right away, they're never really great at it. And it always gets better. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. So you just had a different person doing them, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. All right. So, couple questions. One, did you buy 300 memberships to win election 3? No, or election for area 3? I thought that was pretty interesting.
So here's my take on that. I think Ted was saying the example from the latest election on how close it would be, it was,
right,
and how few of memberships that could be bought that actually could influence an election.
I agree.
I won by over 300 memberships, so someone would have to buy more than that. But 300 memberships for 1 year would be like $11,000. And that is drastically more than I'm getting paid to be area director. Let me tell you that.
And I don't think George Soros is interested whatsoever. So, but I understood his point. So, but I thought it was a funny question I had to ask you.
I took it differently because I guess I've heard the other conversations, but that basically stemmed the 1 year membership before you can vote stems exactly back to that. If somebody wanted it enough, they could buy 1,000 memberships, 2,000 memberships. And if money wasn't a concern to them, certain people are like that, where $100,000 isn't the same to them as it is to me or anything or anybody else.
Right.
And if they wanted the election bad enough, they could go do that under the current bylaws. And that's what they're trying to prevent. I don't think Ted was trying to say that I bought 300 memberships to vote for me.
No, I don't either. I mean, he didn't mention that exact thing on ours, but you know, we talked about the year minimum membership and all of that. So I knew it was all going back to that. And I mean, in a serious way, the only people I would see that it would even matter is if you're trying to get rid of the organization, then you buy enough memberships to win all of the area directors. So then you can control the board and get rid of the organization. That's the only way you can do it.
Or if a position was enough pay that it made sense to buy 1,000 memberships or something like that. If you spent 30 grand on memberships and you could get another extra 1,000 votes.
If you're spending 30 grand on memberships, do you know how many guns or ammo or I don't know anything that isn't that? Like, you gotta be real. And you know what? I'm gonna say it. You gotta be real ate up to spend 30 grand on a seat at the board of directors for the USPSA.
And you gotta do
to not get paid a bunch of money to have a bunch of aggravation for people that, because you're never gonna make everybody happy. You spent $30,000 to have a bunch of people be aggravated at you for however long, 2 years, 3 years, or whatever.
Yep.
You may as well just get married. You spent the $30,000 anyway.
I couldn't come up with that many names. Very clear.
Yeah. Love you, baby. She didn't listen to this podcast. She don't care.
So I guess ZUSPSA, whoever that is, has created quite the stir.
Yeah, it's definitely caused some issues.
Has it? Have any of the meetings gotten hostile?
Oh, yeah. I got accused of leaking documents and being ZUSPSA by Area 2 Director Layden. And that's
well, minute, the only thing in the meeting minutes was he asked you if you leaked them. But I mean, if you read between the lines, it's like, I wonder how that question came about.
Yeah. I've not leaked the documents. I've not liked, I've not shared, I've not commented. I've not done anything related to that account or to anybody that shared anything from that account. I think it's toxic. I don't think it makes sense. It's actually hurting me more than it's helping me at this point for the presidential election. And that's all I can say, really. Like, it is not doing me any favors at this point. It's causing discontent within the board. I'll be honest. I don't think a lot of them trust me right now. And we'll have to get over that at some point or figure something else out.
Do you think there's a way to overcome that?
I don't know right now. I think they're pretty upset with the way all that's being done. And hopefully at some point, I just know I'm comfortable with what I've done. And that's nothing. Like, I haven't even acknowledged you except for I talked to Humble Marksman and I gave him a comment on it. I talked about a steel target paint and I'm talking about it here. That's the only time I've ever even talked about it or acknowledged it in the public.
Right. It does seem to just be causing more issues than fixes. That's for sure. It'll be interesting if we ever figure out who this person is. So But and that's the reason I asked if it's ever gotten hostile, because I could see where, you know, they would assume that it's you. And mm-hmm. then, it, you know, nerves are on edge right now. Things are raw. So I could see where you kind of being the outsider as the new guy coming into the board that, oh, you know, you're going to feel isolated and on an island.
Yep. Oh, I do. I definitely feel like, yeah, outsider is a good way to say it. Like, they've all been on the board for several years together. I think they've all been together for 2 years at this point. Some have been on the board longer, but that core group of eight people have been together for 2 years, and I'm brand new to it.
And none of this started until you got on the board. So
yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I got it. So what, as someone coming in as a president, how would you like to see them direct the organization?
I think we need to stabilize a bunch of stuff, stabilize the rule set, stabilize any changes, and work to better serve the current members we have and help those people stay in the sport longer than the average people do. So if people are happy with the sport, continue to compete, they'll stay with it. We have a horrible turnover rate right now in the sport. And the number is pretty close to 50% of the current members, the 35,000 number, have never even shot a match in the last 12 months. Wow. I don't know. I don't think we're doing enough to see why those people have not shot or if they're even involved in the sport anymore. We just don't know. We don't know what they're doing. There are some stats about if someone DQ'd at the first match, if they've ever come back. That's such a low number. It's not even basically comparable to the 15,000 people that don't even shoot, haven't even shot in the last 12 months.
Is there a significant disparity between the numbers for the during the COVID era versus prior to that, or is it the same throughout?
It's been the same for the last 3 or 4 years that I've found and looked at and kind of tracked pretty casually. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they have access. Someone could go in there and pull all that info and see what it compares year to year. Mm-hmm. But everything I've seen since 2014 or 16, just casually remembering back or going to reference in the in-person board meetings, that's been pretty common. About 50% of the members actually are competing or shooting matches within the last 12 months.
When I talked to Mike, when he was on, we touched on it a little bit, and he said there's a lot of that are still in paper in a filing cabinet, or that from what conversation we had, that's what I recall. So do you know if that stuff is still being input where it can all be electronically managed and reached to determine, like, because we talked about the reason I say that is he said, you know, someone from 1985 who had a membership for 1 year has a number. If they were to join back today, they would get that same number again.
Right. Yep.
So I almost feel like it should all be made electronic, which would make it a lot easier to quickly determine if they have a number or not. So, and I feel like you'd really be able to garner a lot more from statistics that way.
Yeah. I'm not sure if that's still being done or complete or anything at this moment. I think information is the biggest thing. People talk about I can't get in my club. We don't need new members, but I can tell you in the Midwest, that's not an issue. So do we know where those pockets of that are too full that need more clubs, or the pockets
Virginia.
That have plenty of clubs but not enough people in it? And we need to target what we're doing in the different areas. So add more clubs to Kansas City area makes zero sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have to target different strategies for each of those and base it on what's needed where.
Well, that's the big thing, like you said, it's people are willing to drive a certain distance mm-hmm. and no farther.
Right.
Yeah. And there are, you know, there are matches around here that have 100 slots or 120 slots for a weekend local match, and they're filling up in an hour. So it's, I know, so over in this area, I know we're congested and need more outlets, but I also feel like if we had three more clubs, then just three more clubs would fill up in an hour, because those people would, you know, the same people would still be shooting those matches as well, unless they were on the same weekend.
Yeah. I think there would be some crossover, but at some point, not everybody's going to shoot everything, because there's level of involvement. If someone just goes and shoots their once a month match, they're not as involved as someone that's going to go every weekend day to any match, no matter where it's at within 3 hours. And so you'll reach a saturation point on that.
And do you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go
ahead. You know, Logan, Logan Saunders?
Yep.
That dude drives like 3 to 4 hours every weekend, everywhere. Sometimes two matches in a weekend. Yeah, that dude is insane about shooting matches.
I've done that. That's fun. I did two majors in a weekend a couple times. That's a lot of work.
That's got to be exhausting.
Yep. Shot. So we drove down to Tulsa on Saturday. That's 4 hours away. No, so drove down there on Thursday. Shot all day Friday. Nope, sorry, messed that up. Drove down Friday to Tulsa, 4 hours south. Shot on Saturday. Got in our cars after shooting, drove all the way up to Nebraska, which is 6 hours away from Tulsa. Shot the Nebraska State match on Sunday, and then drove back to KC 2.5 hours.
Good Lord.
Yeah. It was a fun weekend. We did it with a group of people, so took some strain off of driving and everything like that. But it was in the summer too, so it was like 100 degrees at one match and 100 and something at the other.
Good Lord.
That's too hot.
That's going to call for a lot of hoist.
Yes.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious. Speaking of hoist, what are your thoughts on more sponsors of USPSA, whether it's cash or product or that type of thing?
Welcome at all. I think we need to give them the value that they're going to bring in. I think that's going to be the biggest challenge if you talk about some non-firearm related company coming in, that we have to give back the value of the sponsorship to them. I think that'll be the biggest challenge and the biggest thing that we would need to overcome as a sport to do that.
Do you think that would grow the sport in a way?
I think it would grow it. So let's just put out this out there. If we had a sponsor that brought in and said, I'm going to give you $100,000 just straight cash, and we require you to pay that back to the competitors as an awards at whatever match that they choose, I think that will change the way people compete and the effort they put into the sport. And I think that'll bring in some people that are not just doing it for the love of the sport, which I'm not saying it's a bad or good thing. It's just going to bring in different people.
If so, like a true professional. Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. That can make a
living off of it.
A living. Yes. They'll come in and do it, and we'll see different people in the sport. We'll probably see the sport change a little. Just like we saw it change a little with PCC. It is what it is. We see it change all the time. Not saying it's good or bad or anything. I think it will change, though.
Because I remember listening. I listened to the Brian Conley's podcast when he had, Steel Challenge champion.
BJ?
Yeah, BJ Norris. Yep. And he was talking about how in years past, there was a lot of cash to be made shooting, and now there's none. So I'm not sure where the, you know, it's all gone from cash to product.
Yeah, I think that kind of from my perspective at CZ, I think that goes to what the industry companies are okay with giving away. I can give away whatever number of guns to a match, but if I requested to give that same cash value and had the company write a check for that, that would never get approved. And I think that's the biggest thing that's happening now. Now, if this sport, if that match and the sponsorship was on TV and 200,000 people watched it, that would be a different conversation that we could have with our company and different conversation we would have with USPSA by a lot.
Well, but again, that goes back to what you were saying earlier, which is what is USPSA bringing to the table to offer that sponsor that they're going to get a return on their investment?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't know what that is.
I think it'd be hard to broadcast USPSA in the current state. The fact that you have time and points and the current state of the world is people are not willing to wait for the scores to be put up. They want to see something right away. And it just doesn't, it would be, you would have to figure out a program that could do it really, really fast. And you wouldn't need to go down and score the targets and wait the several minutes after someone was done shooting to get the score.
Now,
like in bowling or any sport that's televised right now, you know the score instantly. USPSA, you do not.
Okay, but all right. Now, when we were talking to Ted, mm-hmm. you know, we were talking about how all timers are basically going to Bluetooth. Mm-hmm. So we use a tablet. Cameo, like I said, what Jim told me, that thing is completely wired, every bay, every range, everything. So I could see where if you have a Bluetooth timer and the tablet you hit, you know, download, whatever the button is, it comes in, the competitor signs or approves, then why couldn't it immediately update scores and in the corner of your screen, then you could see, you know, the updated rankings and where that person, you know, you could have like the top 10, but then the shooter you just saw, he's 75th in B class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could do that. There's still a delay. And after the shooting is done, you have to go score the targets.
Yeah.
So there's a delay there. It wouldn't be 100% instant, but and USPSA was doing that this last year. As soon as someone hit approve, they would bring that shooter's score up on some of the live streams at the back-to-back nationals back in October. So they're working on that. It's just there's a delay. There's still a delay. Unless you got targets that how you shot and hit the target would automatically score and sync back into the tablet, that then it would be 100% instant.
Gotcha.
There's stuff that they do with rifle shooting that tells exactly where they hit. Now, is that cost effective across 16 targets per and 18 stages? Probably not right now, no.
Yeah, at least with being a rifle shooter guy, you know, you typically it's a stationary target, so that one camera can do it all, or, you know, your sensors triangulate mm-hmm. that shot, whereas on a USPSA field course, I mean, how many cameras at different angles are you going to have
to be able to have one per target minimum?
Basically, yeah. So,
and anybody could accidentally shoot a target or shoot a camera.
Yeah.
I accidentally shot a cable.
Yeah. 100%.
The actual cable, not.
Yeah. The cable that activated the popper blew it up.
Perfect.
So he wasn't aiming for it, though.
Yeah. Oh, not even a little bit. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to shoot that thing. I'm just going to destroy the target. That's fine.
But
yeah.
Oh, my God. You're not going to
hit a camera this big by accident. Come on, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It'll happen.
It was the target at 2020 Nationals at Frostproof. You had the steel. Did you listen to Shannon?
Yeah.
Our episode was
yeah.
Glory Hole.
Yes.
That was the one he shot the cable at the Glory Hole.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I didn't really
shoot out of the way.
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was. I don't want to say it was my finest hour. I was impressed,
Yeah.
I wasn't happy,
were they?
But I was impressed.
I don't remember a target being near that cable, though.
No, because it was a swinger, wasn't it?
No, it's the bobber.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah,
the bobber. Bobber's in the over here,
the cable. Like, yeah. You're not going to get any sense of how far it's really. It wasn't. Let's just say I tricked the trigger, and we'll leave it at that.
It happens. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah,
it happens every time he sees steel, but it's all good.
No big deal. It's just my life.
Well, Matt, that's what I've got. Leo, you got anything?
No, because every side question that I was going to ask, you were like, oh, hey, this makes sense to ask. And I'm like, well, okay, I'm just going to sit here and make funny comments instead then.
Actually, the last thing I had was you mentioned stabilize things. Before making any more rules, you'd like to stabilize everything. Yep. Can you define what you mean by stabilize?
Well, I think the first thing is we need to get information and figure out what the members want. So we need to ask questions. Do we need to change anything? Do we need to leave stuff alone? Do we need to look at changing specific things that a bunch of the members don't like? Are the matches USPSA is putting on, are the consumers of that happy? Can we do anything to improve it? I think we need to stabilize. The board needs some stability about changes all the time. I believe they've already taken that up and learned that just passing rule changes and then making them without getting member input and making them live right away. I think they learned their lesson on that. So I don't think that'll happen anymore. Like, there is good progress being made, but little things like we don't know what areas need what. Like, your area needs obviously more clubs. My area needs more shooters. Plain and simple. And
well, you send us a club, we'll send you shooters.
I was going to say, what should happen is you guys should incentivize, like, you should pay people their moving costs.
That would be match fees might get very expensive.
Always thinking, this guy. I'm an idea man.
There you go.
I didn't say it was going to, like, you're not going to stay solvent doing that, but it's still, it's an idea. Okay.
That's something we got to look at too.
Yeah.
Financial use of the organization's money. Make sure it makes sense.
Absolutely.
Hookers and blow.
I haven't seen any of that yet. Maybe them.
What's the perk of being president? I quit.
I thought every national championship champion after the match, that's how they celebrated.
Yeah. Well, now we know.
No national champion either. So
neither are we. So, okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's, I'm never going to see that. Even if that was the prize.
What did you think of the award ceremony at Talladega Super Speedway?
I thought they were amazing. I thought it was,
very
good. Yeah. I thought it was a very good improvement over the LOCAP award ceremony.
Okay.
By a lot, by a very large margin.
And they did that at the actual CMP?
At the range, yep.
Okay.
At the clubhouse.
Oh, wow. That must have been tight.
Yeah, and then it started to rain, so everybody was, like, trying to get under the cover. So it was a multiple thing that happened.
Okay.
It was not good. They learned from that. They improved on it. So,
yeah, I don't know who got that at the Super Speedway, but they deserve a bonus.
Yeah, it was very good. I don't think they planned for the cost of it, and I don't even know what the cost of it was at this point. But it was good, and it was what it should be. It looked like it was an award ceremony.
Yeah.
At a destination location or something that made sense for it.
Agree. So yeah, all we have to do now is take Talladega Super Speedway to Cameo and we're good.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Matt, thanks for coming on. We greatly appreciate it. It was good talking with you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And we wish you good luck in the election if you decide to go that way.
All right. Thank you.
And hope to see you sometime in the future, maybe even at your restaurant.
Yep, maybe.
Please. That's all I got.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.